Welcome to the Full of Tracy Monday audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 9:02 p.m. That is British summer time. That's stuck in my head. And today is October 3rd. We've just gone through the first day of the chart seminar, the 50th anniversary of the chart seminar, and there were some very interesting conversations. And I thought what's happened in bonds today is rather interesting. If we look at the yield, it's come all the way back down to test the 1.5% level and bounced off it in here today. When we look at the long, or at least the decade-long chart, we can see that there was a whopping upward dynamic 3 weeks ago. It's taken 3 weeks to unwind that move. The big question is this 1.5% level going to hold? There was one of the delegates at the chart seminar today, reminded me that at exactly the same time as we were holding the seminar last year, that the yield was just going through 3%. There was a general consensus that this was an emphatic breakout and that there was scope for additional upside, and not least because of the time that the yield had put in trading below the 3% level for most of 2018. What in fact occurred was that it did get up to 3.25% and failed. And the dynamic of the failure through back down through 3% was greater than the dynamic of the breakout. And it's one of the rules of thumb from the chart seminar that when that occurs, when the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakout, there's a strong likelihood that we could go all the way back down and test the lower side of the range. When I made that comment at the Association for Professional Technical Analysts annual conference in March, it came with a great deal of pushback from the members of the audience. And there was still a great deal of reluctance to countenance the potential that yields could come all the way back to 1.5%. We couldn't have a more different environment today, where there is a very wide consensus that with the quantity of bonds that are now with negative yields internationally, it is only a matter of time before we see the US also moving into a negative yielding environment. However, what we have seen is that the number of bonds with negative yields has in fact contracted by about $3 trillion. It's now at about 14 and change. It was at 17 at the end of August. That's a significant move, and it does suggest that there is a market, at least in this view, that all bonds are going to go negative in terms of their yield. What I am conscious of is that when you do get these very strong views being expressed in the market and the conclusion reached that something is completely inevitable, there's usually a good chance that that is not going to be the case. We've had an incredible momentum move in bonds, and the reality is that investors are pricing in a recession. They're not just pricing in any old recession, they're pricing in a global recession. There is obviously some fuel for that perspective because Germany is in a recession and China's economy is slowing down. And then you have the fact that the US economy is heavily dependent on the health of the consumer, and there are some signs that the US consumer has done about as well as they are going to do. I did see this graphic from Deutsche Bank yesterday, and I thought it was of interest. I did mean to bring it up in yesterday's broadcast, but I simply forgot about it. When we look at the unemployment rate, it's been trending downwards. You can't have a recession without unemployment rising. In fact, unemployment rising does it it generally tends to be at least a coincident indicator and often a short-term lead indicator for a recessionary environment. But the perception of when it is a good time to buy large household goods tends to lead unemployment, and it is starting to turn higher. So that is something that I think is worth considering, that the US economy is booming. I mean, when I look around my home, that the number of people that are engaging in putting in a new bathroom or a new kitchen or putting on new rooms in their houses, certainly just on my street alone, there have been a number of houses sold. There have been a number of new builds going into old plots, and a number of other houses are just doing a lot of renovation. These are the kinds of activities you get where people are happy about their future, and but it also is representative of boomy kind of activity. And property prices have been accelerating higher in West Los Angeles. Well, when we then think about the impact of the trade war, this is something that's unknowable. We don't really know how much of an impact it's having. But one thing we do know, certainly, and again, this is not just anecdotal information, but I know from Mrs. Tracy's business that the tariffs on the container that just arrived from China were double what they were in April. And in April, she raised prices by about 20%, and there was no pushback. I think actually 20% might be a bit of an exaggeration, probably more like 15%, but nonetheless, there was no pushback. And she, in fact, is still the lowest cost supplier of the commodities she sells. Well, that tells me that there is inflationary pressures starting to rise. But bond yields suggest that it's exactly the opposite. When we look at wage growth, well, wages are rising. They're up at about 3.2%. But the problem with that is that wage growth peaked around 3.5% in 2007 and 2008. So there is a question whether wage growth is about as high as it's going to get. These are some of the questions that are outstanding, and against that background, it's looking increasingly likely that the Federal Reserve will be cutting interest rates again, which is why bond yields have come back down. But there is a market in this view. The fact that we've had such an incredible move in bond yields already suggests that there's at least some room for ranging. There is at least some room for a reversionary move to the mean. And even in the event that yields do compress further, well, then that is only going to increase the potential that we're going to get further monetary easing. When we think about the stock market, well, then that's also, I think, rather interesting in here today. The S&P 500 has bounced from the region of the trend mean and to the region of the lows put in August. It reversed an earlier decline to close in positive territory, and so far the sequence of higher reaction lows has remained intact. And as long as that remains the case, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to additional upside. In fact, the Nasdaq 100 just about closed on an upside key reversal. And upside follow-through tomorrow would confirm near-term support in the region of the trend mean. This continues to look like a bullish consolidation in the region of the peak put in back in 2018, and it continues to find support in the region of the trend mean. There is still a fighting chance that we're going to have the bubble phase. Considering where valuations are, considering that we are at the point where we have had an inverted yield curve, and we're now starting to see additional stimulative measures coming through from the various central banks of the world, that does suggest that we are going to have a pop on the upside. One thing we do know is that following inversions of the yield curve in 2006 and in 1998, we had a substantial move in the market. Between 98 and 2000, the Nasdaq, or the S, I think the S&P went up 50% between the inversion in 2006 and the peaks in 2007. The market went up 30%. So there is the potential that we're going to have a bubbly environment, which is predicated on valuation expansion, and that is likely to lead to a significant number of the big cap technology companies pushing up and out of their ranges. At the moment, Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Disney are all right in the region of their respective trend means. Apple is pausing within a very close proximity of its all-time peak, and Microsoft remains in really an incredibly impressive bull market. What we also have evidence of is that highly defensive sectors are doing phenomenally well. Procter & Gamble is not a technology company, but the share is up from 70 to 125 in the course of the last year and a bit. And this sequence of higher reaction lows has been rivetingly consistent. This is an incredibly strong performance from what is a very defensive share. When we think then about, for example, Kimberly-Clark, again, another very defensive share, then it is right in the region of its all-time peaks and has bounced pretty emphatically over the last 3 weeks from the region of the trend mean. For an environment where investors are expressing a great deal of anxiety, we're seeing quite a lot of bullish action. And that's, I think, one of the more important points. There are obviously reasons for some caution, but when we look at individual shares, there is evidence of additional potential for upside, but it's very concentrated in either highly defensive sectors like consumer staples or utilities or the big cap technology sector, which is large cap growth from a factor perspective. The sectors that are not doing well are transportation, for example, and that is being led lower by the airlines, but even that has at least paused in the region of the lower side of its range. The Russell 2000 index was pulling back violently in here today, but also has finished in positive territory, so we're getting at least some support coming through. The S&P 500 banks index has not been as weak as either the transportation or the Russell 2000, and it is right in the region of its trend mean, and if it were to bounce from here, it would be really a rather impressive feat. If it can push up and out of this range, then that really would be supportive of a more liquidity-fueled advance. JP Morgan has been one of the companies that has benefited most, and it failed to sustain that move up to 120, and the dynamic of the failure was greater than the dynamic of the breakout. That would suggest that there is scope here for a retest of the 105 level, but if the broader market can capitalize on the rebound off the lows we saw today, then that may preserve the potential that this is nothing more than a consolidation in the region of the peak. But there is certainly a market here in terms of the views, whether there is scope for upside or near-term downside. When we look at what's going on in the UK, there is, I think, an argument raging here, and but it is probably not the argument that people think it is. The FTSE 100 was down pretty heavily so far this week, and it is back in the region of the lows for the range that's persisted for most of this year so far. Against this background, the pound has been quite steady, and against the dollar, it was up about 36 ticks in here today, wasn't quite able to hold on to all of its advance. Part of the reason for that is because of the fact that the red lines that the UK government have said that they have are blurring somewhat. There is, I think, a realization that anything that can potentially pass a vote in Parliament is going to approximate the deal that Theresa May had negotiated, regardless of the fact that that is basically membership of the EU in all but name. If the pound were to continue to rally, then in nominal terms, that would pressure the outlook for the UK's nominal prices. But the UK is also trading at a pretty substantial valuation discount relative to the rest of the developed markets, which would support additional upside. So there is going to be a winnowing in terms of the shares that are most likely to benefit are those that have got a domestic focus. And there is scope for the yields that are really quite attractive, outstanding on a substantial number of the UK's companies to contract. And that would support an additional push on the upside in terms of their prices. I do think that the UK market is probably more interesting today than it has been at any point in the last 3 years, for the simple reason that we are getting increasingly close to the final stages of this Brexit debacle. And the disillusionment that the UK population has with regard to its domestic market has probably never been this high. And that is creating an opportunity. I at least that's my feeling on from walking around and talking to people over the course of the last few days. The Indian market popped on the upside in the middle of September. It is now testing the region of the trend mean, and there is scope here for additional upside from here. The Bombay Banks Index has been a lead indicator for the wider market, and that is below the trend mean, however. And there are some rather big questions being asked about the outlook for the shadow banking sector. Well, Yes Bank in particular is the fourth largest bank in the country, or at least it was before it pulled back so violently, considering it was trading closer to 300 in March. It was at 30 yesterday, 42 today. There has been an incredible acceleration on the downside. And now we're starting to see the very first evidence of some support starting to come through. Well, this is, I think, evidence of people making a market in guesses about when they're going to raise new capital. The CEO has been saying sooner than the market expects. Fortunately, they've been saying that for the last 3 months. But so much bad news has been priced in that this is a disaster type scenario for a bank that has got significant growth potential. Their growth is tied to their ability to raise capital. And there is likely to be a significant round of fundraising in terms of trying to get additional capital onto the balance sheet, but that can quickly be converted into growth for the business, considering that the share was at 400 as recently as a year ago and is at 42 today. I think it is reasonable to think that a 90% decline is probably enough. What it also suggests is that if troubled banks can source additional funding and ease the liquidity crisis that has gripped the shadow banking sector and housing finance sector in India, then that should be beneficial for the wider market. Dewan Housing Finance had technically defaulted on one of its bonds. It has fallen even more than Yes Bank. It's down 95%, and it was at a new low in here today. It hasn't really rallied just yet, and there is still a downward bias to trading. So there is no evidence just yet of that company being able to source additional financing. But we are definitely seeing international investors starting to smell around the Indian market because it is one of the few high growth markets in international banking. And this liquidity crisis has thrown up some are thrown up the kind of opportunities that don't turn up all that often in terms of value creation. Now, when we then think about what's going on in Europe, well, we're quite a long way from the kind of value creation that you see in some emerging markets. The DAX index is reflecting the fact that the ECB is might be engaging in additional quantitative easing, but so far that's been modest in nature, and the German economy is in a recession. The euro, however, today was in slightly positive territory, but there is still a downward bias. Europe certainly needs a weaker currency. The gold price was also steady in here today. It wasn't quite able to hold all of its advance, but it is still trading around the $1,500 area. Then oil prices are reflecting the drawdown in expectations for global growth, but they were in well off the lows in here today, and a short-term oversold condition has replaced the short-term overbought condition that arose following the attacks on Saudi Arabia. So I do think that we have seen some quite extreme moves, particularly in the bond markets. We have seen a drawdown on stock markets. I think there is the scope for a turnaround in the not too distant future there, and if stock markets can continue to hold their respective trend means, then that would be rather supportive of the view that we're going to see a break on the upside at some point over the next month. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.